Can you believe that there are some people in this world that did not tune in to the Alliance Vlog Podcast? Shame on you!
Shame on you! My name is Ella Indy, and I'm one half of the NWA Women's World Tag Team Champion.
And I'm Kimmy Page, the other half of the NWA World Women's Tag Team Champion.
And you better go listen to the Alliance Vlog, what is it called?
Podcast, period!
Or you're ugly, period. Your power approved.
It's the radioactive pop with Danny Limelight, United Wrestling Network World Heavyweight Champion. And make sure you tune into the Alliance Vlog every week. You heard it here first. Straight with Bobby.
Hey guys, check this out. I am officially now sponsored by Dubby. Dubby is a clean energy drink made to give you focus with no crash. If you guys are like me, you're always needing a burst of energy, especially with one full crash. Dubby contains vitamins, amino acids, a nootropic, and 150 milligrams of caffeine. It keeps me awake with no jitters, guys. Check it out. Merch link is in the bio. Dubby.
Podcasting out of Alliance Wrestling Studios, pontificating on pro wrestling, the innovator of talk NWA, he is Jay Cow.
Hey, what is up, everyone? Welcome to the Alliance Blog Podcast, a presentation of alliance-wrestling.com, your number one source for news and information for the National Wrestling Alliance. My name's Jay Cal, and the gentleman, I don't know if it's left or right because the camera's mirrored, is Andrew. Andrew and I have known each other for, 11 years?
Longer than that, I believe. I mean, you've known of me for like almost 20, so.
Damn, is it really? Yeah, well, because you were 13.
No, 15, 16 when I came around the whole PWG scene and all that.
No, AWS.
AWS, Rev Pro, all that when I was 15, 16.
Okay. All right. Well, anyways, this is Andrew Pacina, also known as the owner, proprietor, executive director of Epic Pro Wrestling Los Angeles, a wrestling promotion that has been in existence since 2022. The brainchild, the vision of Mr. Andrew Pacina as kind of following in the same legacy as Epic Pro War, the promotion ran by Gary Yap. This is kind of it's not the same. It's a continuation in name only because it's very much a different style of wrestling, different promotion. I guess the one thing you guys have in common is that you've always looked for some of the better known talents out there and you bring some names to SoCal that we don't typically see. You went from being, you know, a true fan to literally being like, you know, one of the movers and shakers in SoCal. Let's talk about that journey and how you went from being just a fan of professional wrestling at 15, 16 years old, you know, going to Frankensons for AWS or Rev Pro to, you know, running your own wrestling promotion. How'd that happen? Because it's not something that you just decide one day, I want to be a wrestling promoter. How'd you do that? How did you make that happen?
Man, I don't know. I guess you could like.
All right, interview over, guys.
It's over. We're done. Just in time because we got the Lakers in an hour. I'm just kidding. I guess it all started when I was like a kid. And, you know, much like many kids of my generation, backyard wrestling was a thing. And so many of my friends on my street, pretty much every guy on my street watched professional wrestling. You know, that's how popular it was when I was a kid. You know, all the kids in my class, all the boys in my class loved professional wrestling. And this was like 96, 97 up until the early 2000s. So it was the entire boom period. And I was the only kid in my of my group of friends who had a backyard. Most of my friends lived in apartments or they lived in houses that had small backyards or back houses. So they couldn't really do anything. So my place ended up being the hub for like all our backyard and front yard shenanigans. We would put on shows and all that. And I was just like the de facto booker owner and all that because it was my backyard. And it just went from there. And like I guess like having a curiosity about booking really peaked when I was like 14, when a buddy of mine, Mike Kevorkian, who runs Circle Six now, we met in seventh grade in the year 2000. He came across this text simulation game called Extreme Warfare Revenge, which is like a booking sim. I don't know if you ever heard of it. I see you nodding. You probably know about it, Jay.
I never played it, but I like, oh man, I've heard so many people talk about it. And even like now I'm 45 years old. I'm like, maybe I should look at that. Cause
if you have a PC, get it. You know, I have a Mac, so I don't have the ability to play, but I wasted so many hours of my teen years playing that game because it the way it works is just like it's like based on numbers and stuff. Like, a wrestler has a certain amount of numbers for stats for like technique, speed, brawling, all that kind of stuff, charisma, and all like gets added up into like, you know, this weird algorithm, and then it creates like this weird like text-based AI before there was AI, like versions of match reviews by people who were writing for like websites at the time, and it would give reviews on how your performance did and, you know, ratings. And I just got so interested in it, and I just got so interested in like fantasy booking and thinking about like, oh, it'd be cool if this was booked like this, that, and that. It just sort of went on and on like that. And by the time like I got around the business in like 2004, when I started working for like PWG and started going to their shows all the time, like working for them, like I would see how Super Dragon, Excalibur, and Disco Machine would do things. I would basically sit there like a sponge and absorb things. And it's weird because I look back on it and now it's like I wish I could have like taken advantage of that more, because like I was immature and I was just like a dumb kid most of the time. I was coming to the shows, I was high off my ass and shit, and like I just didn't know what I had. But now that I look back on it, it's like I wish I could have like asked more questions. I asked a lot of questions, and like Super Dragon probably doesn't know this, but I consider him like, you know, the guy who taught me about the business, the ins and outs, and taught me a lot about like what makes good professional wrestling, what makes a good match, what makes a good professional wrestler, and all that. So it really started from there. And as time went on, like in the business, I was like, because I did want to be a professional wrestler too. But by the time I was like 18, which was like 2006, there wasn't really a school out here. Rev Pro, which was the school I wanted to train at, closed down in 2004. Yeah. And there wasn't much else. And it was like, at that time, it was like, it was really hard to see a future for a guy like me in professional wrestling. Cause at that time, it was just WWE and TNA. You know, you could go to Japan, but you're not going to make a living in Japan. Like, unless you were Jack Evans, you're not going to make a living in Mexico. And that's just that was the reality of professional wrestling. So, me being a kid who was like 5'7, I realized, you know, there's no future for me, so maybe I'll just find something behind the scenes and all that. Lo and behold, was I ever fucking wrong?
Things changed quite a bit, man.
It has.
It almost happened overnight, too, because it was like, I mean, look, you and I were watching the same promotions, and, you know, we'd go to AWS or Rev Pro, and you'd see guys like, you know, for example, our friend Adair Cole, Shogun. You know, he's a tall dude, but he was never going to be a WWE superstar.
Yeah.
But guys like him now kind of dominate, you know, a lot of the independent wrestling scene and some of the majors, you know, like, not to be disrespectful whatsoever, but a guy like Kevin Owens, you and I saw Kevin Owens when he came out here to the West Coast, Mr. Wrestling. Did you ever at any point in time think he would be main eventing WrestleMania or be in the ring with Stone Cold Steve Austin?
No.
No, I mean, I thought it was great, but I never expected that for him.
Like, I always loved Kevin, and, like, I knew Kevin before. Like, I remember when he first came to PWG in 2004 and just, like, you know, him and El Generico, Sami Zayn, as people know him, just remembering what they were like, and they were so talented, but it's not just them, but so many of the wrestlers who came by, I was like, man, these guys are so great, but there's no way WWE's good. AJ Styles was one of those guys. I didn't think he'd ever be in WWE. Claudio Castagnoli, I always thought he would end up in WWE, but I just thought he would have been a bigger star than he ended up being. But like, it's just weird how professional wrestling just totally flipped upside down, like, over the span of like a couple years, you know, and like, you know, it's like right around that time when I wasn't in wrestling. Like I just sort of checked out a few years, like from 2011 to 2015 and stuff. And it was just like, you know, what happened? You know, it's like I was totally gone. And even when I try and look up what happened, it's like it's still weird what happened. But ultimately, it's for the better, you know, because like again, like you said, when we were going to shows back in the 2000s, it was hard to imagine like a secondary promotion like AEW coming along to help like build the wrestling economy, and then like so many other promotions being able to provide like enough work for wrestlers where they can like start making a living on the independents and all that. So it's really an amazing and fascinating thing to see. And it's like, you know, if you would have told me when I was 15 years old about all this, I would have been so stoked, you know, especially now with the advent of technology where it's like, you can see a wrestling show anytime you want on YouTube or whatever on a streaming service. Whereas before you had to wait weeks, sometimes months before you could watch a show from like Ring of Honor or CZW or IWA itself.
Were you, cause I know I was kind of towards the tail end and I did a little bit of tape trading, but I mean, almost nothing. Right. Cause like, I went and got tapes for like guys that I like. So like, Brian Kendrick, Best of Spanky from, you know, what was it, Memphis Championship Wrestling or Samoa Joe and 01. Like that's the kind of shit that I was looking for. What about you? Like, were you tape trading back in the day? Were you getting those CZW tapes or what were you watching back then?
I was getting those CZW tapes. Remember our friend Sean McCartney, XPWTV Sean?
Yes.
Top Notch tapes. I would get tapes from him. I would get ROH tapes, IWA Mid-South tapes. I forgot who I would get these tapes from, but I would get, you know, and I want to bring this, you know, a little on topic because, you know, you're the Alliance, you know, guy and all that. But I would get NWA Wildside tapes as well from a trader. Wildside,
that, sorry to interrupt, but it was so weird when you think about that little promotion in Cornelia, Georgia that saw so many stars go through that wrestling promotion. And they were like on the cusp of technology because they were on this channel called American One.
Mm-hmm.
And they literally, you know, before DSL was a thing, before high speed internet was a thing, they were literally putting that show online before YouTube, right?
Yeah.
This is wild, man. And it was literally, you could watch it on a dial up internet. It was awful. It was all grainy, but like,
I think you had to use Real Player to watch that or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're familiar with it, I guess.
Not with that aspect of their distribution, but I would like get tapes of like their shows and all that. People would have like tapes where they have multiple episodes on it, or sometimes they'd have the big shows, and I would, you know, check those out because like you know they had a lot of great talent, like Jimmy Rave, the late great Jimmy Rave came from there, AJ Styles, the Lost Boys, Rain Man. There was just some good talent, you know, on those shows. It was just so much fun to watch. And like, you know, to me, when I think of like what a modern presentation of like quote unquote studio wrestling or old school wrestling should be, I think of NWA Wildside. And I think that's what the formula should be, because it had that same little unique environment, that atmosphere, but it was also like new school. It was cutting edge. And it was modern, and I felt like that's something that a lot of these like promotions that try and be old school really miss the boat on, you know, because they think it's a certain way. But when you go back and you watch stuff like Mid-South or Continental Wrestling Alliance,
yeah,
like it was wild, you know. Like I remember like before my last show, I was watching a lot of old school Memphis shit, and there was a lot of crazy brawling going on, you know, a lot of crazy stuff. Like Jerry Lawler got hit by a car, dude, in one angle. Like fireballs, all this stuff was going on. So it's like I wanted to find like an inspiration for an angle on my last show. And I kept it simple where I had baby faces come out, get beat up, and then another wave and they come, and then final wave comes out and the heels just run off and all that, like that kind of stuff. And I felt like NWA Wildside really did it right, you know. And it's really hard like to see any other promotion try and like, you know, get that right the way they did, in my opinion.
You want to hear something kind of weird and ironic?
Tell me.
Bill Behrens, who was the owner of that promotion, Wildside,
yeah,
is still like producing with the NWA currently.
Oh, the Billy Corgan's NWA, right?
Yeah, Billy's NWA. Okay. Yeah,
I haven't watched a lot of NWA since Billy Corgan took over, so maybe they're doing it different. So I don't know, but
yeah, I mean, look, I already know it's not your cup of tea. And like, you know, being an apologist for the NWA, I always find myself like explaining to people why I watch it and what I like about it. It is very much that studio feel. Mm-hmm. The modern NWA, Billy's NWA, you know, I always say this, anything good about the modern NWA, it's Billy Corgan. And everything mm-hmm. bad about the modern NWA, it's Billy Corgan. So it's like, you know, it is what it is. There's some things that I love about it. There's some things that I don't. And, you know, it's hard to be as big a proponent of that brand as I used to be. Mm-hmm. But there's still a lot of good things about it. Like, there's guys on that roster that I think ultimately you would love to have in your promotion if, you know, you were looking for outside audience members. But
I know about Colby Carino.
Colby had a real good run there as junior heavyweight champion.
Is he still there?
So he just lost the title recently.
Okay.
Very, very recently. And I don't know if that means he's done or if that just means that they're going in a different direction currently. But it kind of seems like when a champion loses their belt in the NWA, most times they head on.
They're on the way out.
There's a guy there that honestly reminds me a lot of you.
Oh, God.
Your personality, your character. He calls himself Mr. NWA Joe Alonzo. When you get a chance, just look him up. He's such a good shit talker.
Okay.
He's really good in the ring.
Is he flippy? Is he flippy?
I mean, he does some flippy, but I wouldn't call him like a. He's kind of grounded. He was trained by Ivo Fantastico.
Okay, I'll check him out.
Yeah, I think you would like Joe Alonzo.
Okay.
But all right, let's. But this isn't about the NWA, honestly. This is about, you know, Epic Pro Wrestling Los Angeles and really Andrew Pacina and the story behind you. So we were talking, you were watching tape, you were doing tape trading and getting stuff from all over the place as far as Wildside, but Ring of Honor. I know you used to like ZZW. I know you were a John Sandy guy.
And you know
Jesus!
And you know what's funny? You mentioned that you're an NWA apologist. And like, I think one thing we would have in common is that, like, way back in the day when I was a CZW fan, you know, even when they were at their best, people would still bash them. And I would always get a lot of heat because, or not heat, but I would always get a lot of people like busting my balls because, you know, oh, I'm the CZW guy and all this. And, you know, I totally get where you're going.
Yeah.
What goes on with you and all that since you're the NWA guy. But, like, CZW was so good back in the day, man. Like, they were the main reason why I discovered NWA Wildside because they had an interpromotional feud going on there. And that was a lot of fun. And, yeah, just CZW was so, so good from, like, 2002 to, like, 2005 and 6. Like,
They were like the home for like Claudio Castagnoli, Chris Hero, you know,
Alex Shelley was elevating his status there and before he went to Ring of Honor. They had Jimmy Jacobs as well. Super Dragon was there.
Super Dragon,
a lot of good talent, you know, and the death matches too were good. If you like death matches, they had good ones. Like Necro Butcher was a regular there and he was putting on fun ones. Sexy Eddie had that one infamous moment where he cut his artery open in a match and then squeezed blood into his mouth. You know, Sick Nick Mondo was, you know, one of my favorites when I was in high school. And to be honest, I know at the time I was bummed that he sort of retired, but like in hindsight, I'm really glad he did, you know, retire when he retired, you know, after a few years and didn't punish his body even more because now here we are 20 years later. We're not seeing the same tragic story with him that I saw with a lot of guys like JC Bailey, for instance, who was one of my favorite wrestlers when I was a teenager. And unfortunately, he had his story where he battled addictions. And Trent Acid was another guy I loved as a teenager. And then, you know, he had his demons, you know, get the better of him. You know, he wasn't a deathmatch guy, but, you know, seeing Nick Mondo be able to get out of that, like, in, you know, having a body of work where it's like you can't look back and be all like, oh man, this is where he really fell off as a wrestler. You know, I'm really happy about that. So there's a, that was a weird little tangent about Nick Mondo.
We are SoCal guys, but I mean, did you pop when you'd see guys like Super Dragon or B-Boy end up in CZW?
Oh yeah. Like I remember always being vocal on the CZW boards about like how they got to book Super Dragon and more SoCal guys. Like, because also before I was an CZW ROH guy, I was an XPW guy.
Right.
And I remember Super Dragon, you know, appearing for the first time at XPW Scene of the Crime in, like, April 2001. That's where I first saw him, and he had that match with Rising Sun that just blew my mind, that made me a huge fan of him and made me want to see more of SoCal wrestling. But I was only 13 years old at the time, and, like, you know, like, as my fandom went on, I just became, like, I've always been one of those guys who's always about the hometown team, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a Laker fan, I'm a Dodger fan, obviously, and, you know, I'm the same way with pro wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, I want to support the home team, you know? But it was, like, really awesome always seeing, you know, getting a tape and seeing, like, a SoCal guy in ROH or Jersey All Pro Wrestling, IWA Mid-South, CZW, wherever, you know?
I used to write Jeremy Borash emails about talents in SoCal that I thought he should look at. It's like, yeah, there's a roster, entire roster, UPW. These guys would be great. Samoa Joe, Tom Howard, Christopher Daniels. And I kind of feel vindicated because I ended up using Daniels at some point down the road. And, of course, Samoa Joe.
Brought in Joe Kazarian. Like, yeah. A lot of SoCal guys. It's funny you mentioned Tom Howard. Like, I was going back and watching some of his matches. Like, that dude was so good for his time, man. Like, if he came around today, I feel like he would be a top star.
Well, Zoe Stark in the WWE is his girlfriend, and I guess he had helped train her prior to her WWE debut.
Okay. And
so it's like you could see like that learning tree that he had. I mean, like UPW, he was kind of running the training side of it, and you know
he moved to Vegas. I know that, but I didn't know he was still a foot in the wrestling game still.
I mean, I don't think he's actually like in the game anymore. I just think for Zoe, he was more hands on because that was his girlfriend. So like,
totally yeah,
he was a pretty good, I liked him a lot. And I guess I didn't know this at the time when I would go to UPW shows, but I guess he was working in Mexico with AAA as KGB, some sort of Russian.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember seeing results of like AAA from like the 90s and stuff, and I'd be like, who is KGB? And I would be looking it up, and then I eventually found out, oh, Tom Howard, like, oh shit, you know, like just part of the secret of like SoCal wrestling history that a lot of people don't know about.
Yeah. So you mentioned, I can't talk anymore. You mentioned Combat Zone Wrestling. You're talking about XPW. So I've never been a deathmatch guy. I got into XPW late. I mean, I would watch the TV show, obviously, here locally. And it was, you know, it wasn't great. But I'd see guys who I liked, like Joey Chaos was one of the guys that I really liked a lot. And, you know, they tend to bring in a lot of the talents, you know, former ECW guys like, you know, Big Dick Dudley or Shane Douglas, even Chris Candido.
Tracy Smothers.
Yeah, Tracy Smothers.
That guy ruled, man. I miss Tracy Smothers so much. But
that's how I feel about Chris Candido, man.
My God. You want to hear Candido's story?
Please. I'm a big proponent of Chris Candido. I was sad like everyone else when he passed away, but I feel like that's a guy that had so much unrealized potential and like
very underrated.
He held gold in ECW, he held gold in WWE, he held gold in WCW, but I still think he was so underrated and undervalued. But please tell me your story.
So this is also a Just Incredible story. So
good.
It was the last XPW show in LA during the original run, March 1st, 2003, I believe.
Okay.
I went to the show with my buddy Chris and a bunch of our other friends from Glendale. And we took the bus from Glendale to North Hills, and we got there early, and we stayed late because we wanted to get autographs because, you know, we're a bunch of fans and shit.
Yeah.
after the show, we somehow made our way toward like the gorilla position, me and Chris. And we had DVDs and we ran into Justin Credible and we asked him if we could get his autograph. And he started signing our autographs and he was really cool. He was really talkative. And then like somebody, I think maybe it was Kevin Kleinrock. I don't want to say it was Kevin Kleinrock, but Kleinrock was like, yo, Justin, we need you in the back. He's like, hold on, man. I'm talking to some fans right now. So that to me was really cool. He kept talking to us for a few more moments. And then Chris Candido came in. And then, like, he saw me looking at Candido, and then he handed Candido the DVD and the pen, and then Candido signed it, like, without asking, you know, without me asking. And, like, he was so fucking nice. And the thing about, like, that show was, like, I'm sure you probably remember that time, like, in the late 2000s when Candido was on his down skid a little bit. And everyone was just counting him out, you know, and he was out of shape. He was wrestling in a t-shirt and he just was not the guy he was before. And it was like his addictions were getting the better of him. But that night, you know, he had a match with Justice Payne and everyone was expecting it to be terrible. But it ended up being one of the best matches on that show. And it showed that Candido still had a little something in him. And then, like, I want to say, like, about a year after that, he was starting to make, like, his comeback and all that. And he was, like, starting to turn it around. And then, you know, 2 years after that, Sonny Siaki in that cage match at TNA, just, man. But, yeah, that was my Candido story. Like, him and Justin Credible, like, really good dudes, you know? It's like I always respected those guys because of that, and I always have respect for wrestlers who do that kind of stuff for fans because we were just kids, you know. They could have told us, you know, get out of here, but, you know, they were cool with us. They talked to us, signed our stuff, and, you know, there's not much more wrestlers can do or anyone in the business can do to make a fan happy besides giving them, like, maybe a minute of your time, you know. It costs nothing, but you'll probably end up getting a lot more in through life, you know, because of that.
I agree 100%. Like, you know, even now as a father, you know, and I take my kids sometimes to wrestling shows. Like, we took the little ones to Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, the event that they did in Arizona. And they fell in love with Willie Mack and Kevin Martinson, but they didn't know Kevin's name. So they just called him Purple Pants because he was wearing purple pants. And then the next TV taping we happened to go to, he was there, and they were so excited to see them that they literally spent like 20 minutes just, okay, not 20 minutes, but a good at least 5 to 10 minutes just talking to Kevin. And he was such a cool dude about it. I'm like, you could tell them to shut up anytime you want. If you need to get up and go ahead. And he's like, no, man, this is great. And it was like, you know, as a dad, like that means something else, you know, like when you're a kid, it's like, that's cool as fuck. But when it's your own children who are benefiting from that, it's a very gratifying feeling. And now, you know, whenever I see Willie Mack or when I see Kevin Martinson, like I want to see them do very well. Like, I've always liked both those guys, but now I want to see them do even better because they took time, you know, to spend with the kids.
And I remember when Willie Mack was like standing out in front of the venues of PWG shows in like 2004 and 2005, and would help set up the ring and stuff, and then would sit front row, buy a ticket. Like, that was a dude who really genuinely loved professional wrestling, and it's really cool to see all the success he's having. I'm glad he's in a Ring of Honor and AEW.
I was in TJ over the weekend, and he was a surprise opponent for Dralístico and Metallic, and every time I see him in TJ, and I've been to a lot of shows in TJ, they love him. Like, he is revered. He is admired, and they go nuts for him. And, I mean, he's a great talent, but it's like
Lucha fans really love Willie Mack.
And he gets it too. Like, he gets it, and he performs for them.
Yeah,
but it's like it's wild to see that guy who, like you said, you know, sitting ringside at XPW, sitting ringside at, you know, those old you know, NWA TV tapings at the strip club. You know, they really, he's been around and he really worked hard for his success. So he's a guy that I always celebrate as well too.
Yeah, he deserved, he didn't deserve it. He earned it, you know. I mean, I don't want to put down the word deserved. I do think it has a lot of merit, but at the same time, it's like when you look at people who are in the business and when they're at where they're at and what they did to get there, like Willie Mack is genuinely that feel good story. And he's that guy that, you know, he's basically every day, you know, he's a modern day Dusty Rhodes, in my opinion.
Yeah. And you're not the only person that feels that way. I've heard a lot of people refer to him specifically as a modern day Dusty Rhodes. But let's get back to, again, Andy, in your fandom. You know, at one point you were attending so many shows in SoCal. You started writing for SoCal Uncensored. In fact, you were with me at SoCal Uncensored for a while when Steve dropped the, you know, he's like, hey, I'm done. Adair, you and I kind of picked it up and we're still keeping it going in Steve's sabbatical. You got a bad rap a lot of times. And I always told people this. I'm like, look, man, he's not reporting news. He's reporting his opinion. When you're reading what Andrew's writing, it's not like a fact article. It's not a news item. It's an opinion piece. And so many people were on you so hard because of your opinion contradicted a lot of other people's. How do you feel about that? And did that thick skin, did that help you develop thick skin to become a promoter? Or is it just all part of the day in the life of Andrew?
I mean, I was getting hate from the message board days. I don't know if you remember that, man. When I was like 15, 16, just voicing my opinions on wrestling. But it's like, I never really thought about it because it's like when I was doing all that, I was in high school, right? And
you had grown-ass men yelling at you on message boards.
And it's like, and I would tell my friends about it who were in high school, but they weren't going to wrestling shows, and they would laugh and like, they would bring me down to reality. It's like, these are a bunch of guys who are basically dorks and they're yelling at you, man. Like, just don't even bother, man. And it's like, that was the way I took it. And it's like, the way I still look at it is like, a lot of these dudes, like, who get mad, or and women and non-binary people, a lot of these people who get mad at me, they just either don't understand me, they don't understand my humor, they don't understand just how I am, or they're just thin-skinned. And, you know, like you said, you know, developing a thick skin, like, I've always had it, you know. Like, I'm Hispanic. I grew up with Hispanic parents, and, you know, I had a lot of Hispanic friends. If you're Hispanic, you're going to get clowned on a lot by people who care about you, you know? And it's like, it's something I've dealt with, and, you know, if people can't handle that, that's their problem, not mine. But, like, it's never really been something that's been on my mind. It only really bothers me when people say they want to, like, they just want to, like, fight or something, you know. It's like, you want to fight for what? Because I have an opinion. Okay, let's do something. But then people never want to do when it's time to do so. And it's like at this point, I'm in my mid-30s. I'm 36. I'm too old for this. I don't need it, that aggravation. But like, ultimately, the way I look at it is, if people get mad at me because I view professional wrestling a certain way, again, it's their problem, not mine.
Yeah. So let's talk about the name Epic Pro Los Angeles. It's an homage to...
It's really just Epic Pro. Epic Pro Wrestling. I don't put Los Angeles. I just put it on there.
Everywhere. Okay, so...
On social media only.
I guess the distinction is that if you go to Cage Match, and I know that's just a beacon of knowledge, and it's nothing's ever wrong on that site, but they designate your promotion as Epic Pro Wrestling Los Angeles and Gary Yap as Epic Pro Wrestling War. So if you ever, you know, I don't know if you even look at stuff like
that. I look at Cage Match all the time. I'm not going to lie to you. And I've looked at the Epic Pro Cage Match. So I haven't seen that. So I'm going to check it out. But yeah.
Well, so I was going to go, with Gary Yap. Obviously, Gary Yap is a name that's synonymous with SoCal wrestling. In some ways, very, very good. In some ways, very, very bad. I like Gary Yap, and I feel like his biggest crime was being too ambitious. It didn't communicate well enough when things went south. He was the guy that tried to book Ultimo Dragon, Brian Danielson, the American Dragon, and Super Dragon, and what would have been probably the biggest match in Southern California history. Of course, that shit never happened because everything fell apart. But to his credit, I really feel like Gary Yap tried to come back and tried to at least tell wrestling in a different way that we were kind of given here in Southern California. We've always had Empire Wrestling Federation with Jesse Hernandez. For the last 17 years, we've had SoCal Pro. We've had various independent lucha companies running in Los Angeles. Bart was a mainstay here with AWS. And even Pro Wrestling Guerrilla is kind of, you know, born out of the ashes of Rev Pro. What Gary was doing was different. First with Epic, then Pro Wrestling War, and then the amalgamation of Epic Pro Wrestling War. How much credit do you give Gary in your views of pro wrestling, and how much of his vision is a part of your vision today?
I'm trying to carefully word this because I don't want to sound like I'm burying Gary, because, you know, I owe the guy a lot.
Well, look, let's preface it by saying that, you know, Gary has done some good things and Gary's done bad things, and he's always been cool as fuck to me.
No, I mean, in the way it's like, I don't want to bury him as if he had no, you know, influence or anything on my, you know, views on wrestling or anything like that. But like, he gave me the blessing to use the name, and that was pretty much what it is. Like, I didn't know what I wanted the name to be for Epic Pro when I was like in the concept stages for this. Like, I did try to get him to bring back Epic Pro in 2016, his version of it, but, you know, it didn't pan out. But like, when I was thinking about a name for my promotion, Epic Pro came to mind. I was like, you know, I thought it was funny. I thought it would get a laugh out of some people, myself included. So I was like, I hit up Gary because him and I are friends, and, you know, I told him, hey man, blah blah blah, and then, you know, he's like, yeah, cool. And then he designed the logo, which this is an exclusive. You're the first person I'm telling. He designed the Epic Pro logo. And but ultimately, my Epic Pro is a separate entity, its own separate product from his products. And really, it's just the only influence I have on the only influence on these shows are like influences from PWG and Super Dragon. And down the line, I would love to implement more like influences from like Japanese wrestling promotions, and, you know, some stuff that Gabe Sapolsky did in Ring of Honor, and mix in a little bit of prime ECW stuff along with old school Memphis and Mid-South type stuff. But for now, the vast majority of my influence is Super Dragon and PWG. Well, without Gary Yap, I will say this. Because, like, my introduction to SoCal Wrestling was XPW. Yeah. And it was the introduction for SoCal Wrestling to a lot of people. UPW as well. Then I started reading about, like, all the other promotions out here. But I was too young to be going to those shows until I was, like, 15 in 2003. Rev Pro was one of those promotions I always wanted to go to. Because I would hear about... Excuse me, I had to burp. I heard about all these amazing promotions, but I could never go to those shows. So with Epic Pro, the original Epic, like, it was something that I got to see on TV because it was on KJLA, the same channel as XPW.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh man, I'm gonna get to see the show, and I don't have to rely on like trading tapes to see Super Dragon, you know. I get to see him here in Epic Pro, and I get to see Brian Danielson and all that. And the cool thing about Epic Pro Wrestling was the last show they did, the official last show they did, was in Glendale, California, which was the city I grew up in. And my friend Ryan and I, we walked from where I lived toward the Glendale Center Studios, I believe they were called, to stand in line and wait for like GA tickets, because we didn't, you know, email to reserve our spots. We just decided to show up. We went at 10 in the morning. We got in and got to see all sorts of cool matches. Samoa Joe versus Brian Danielson, Super Dragon, and the match with Bobby Quantz and Jardy France. Like, it was such a cool night, man. And if it wasn't for Gary, I probably wouldn't have like been able to see those guys live until like PWG. And that show was free too. which is really awesome. And I got to see them for free. And, you know, that really was like, that also helped me like gain more interest in SoCal wrestling. So I guess Gary,
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So yeah, I guess Gary played a small part, not exactly a major part, but he played a small part in my wrestling fandom. Go ahead.
Were you there the night that they had the SpongeBob match?
Yeah, that was a show.
Yeah,
it was SpongeBob versus Taro and Excalibur. And that was the night when New Jack got cut that promo on Disco Machine, and then like he was talking about the scars on his head, and some fan in the audience was like, "They're fake." And then after the promo, New Jack got in that dude's face.
Literally was sitting in his lap. It was pretty, like, I thought he was going to stab the dude. And I, you know, New Jack was not the, that would have surprised me if he did, you know?
Yeah.
That was Excalibur referred to Dave Marquez's Gucci glasses, which that's exclusively how I knew Dave Marquez for the first
Gucci glasses
in SoCal.
And yeah, that was a crazy show. Another New Jack story. I was 13, about to turn 14. It was XPW. I forgot what the show. Oh, New Year's Revolution. I don't know if you remember that show. It was January 2002. They were hyping up this huge thing that was going to change the landscape of the professional wrestling world, but instead XPW just brought out two bums, you know, and had their heel stable, the Enterprise, swerve everyone. Then the first match of the night was Vic Grimes versus New Jack. And then the end of the match was Grimes, you know, throwing New Jack off a balcony through tables. After the show, my friends and I are in the back of the Olympic Auditorium. We're trying to get autographs from wrestlers. And we see New Jack flirting with these two women, right? Me and my friends, you know, the nerds that we are, we're going up to New Jack and we're waiting for him. And then he, like, finishes the conversation. He's like, "All right, ladies, I'll see you at the hotel. We'll go do." And he looks at my friends and I, and he just stops and goes, "Drugs sometimes." And the girls laughed. So we go up to New Jack. We're getting our autographs. And then I go, like, the little dumbass that I was, goes, "Great bump tonight, New Jack." And New Jack looks at me like, "Great, that shit hurt."
Nice.
And he signed my autograph and he didn't kill me. And I was like, he was really nice. You know, it was weird. I thought he was going to be mean, but he was really nice and funny. And, you know, I never would have expected that from him. But I guess, you know, being like a little kid going through puberty, you know, I guess New Jack had a soft spot for us and all that. So,
yeah. R.I.P. New Jack, right?
Yeah.
Man, we've talked about too many wrestlers that have passed away. That's kind of depressing. Let's talk about more fun stuff. Let's talk about, obviously, you know, we've talked a little bit about the history that you had with SoCal. We've talked about getting into pro wrestling. So what was the big transition? What was the big step from you going to, you know what, putting your money where your mouth is? You've always had this vision of what you thought pro wrestling should be. And yes, you had worked with Super Dragon and Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, and you had done things with other wrestling promotions, but you finally stepped out and you did something on your own. And that's not an easy process. As somebody who is a small business owner myself, there's so much red tape that you have to get through to get into getting a building, getting a venue, getting someone to even listen to you and say, "Hey, I have a wrestling company and we'd like to do a show here." Tell me about the process and what it took for you to go from, "Hey, I'm a guy who really likes pro wrestling," to "I'm a guy that has a pro wrestling company."
So I guess really it all started in like 2016 when I got back into the pro wrestling scene and the business out here. Cause I had taken a sabbatical for a couple of years cause I wanted to pursue, I was just burnt out and tired of professional wrestling. And two, I wanted to pursue a career in mixed martial arts and, you know, become a regular jiu-jitsu competitor and wanted to be a black belt. excuse me. Sorry again for burping. I got back in the scene, and by the time it was 2016 and I was back in the scene, I noticed things have gotten so much better for professional wrestling and locally too, because before, like, the Santino Bros were barely fledgling. They were in a backyard. They were producing some good talents. But by the time I got back, they became the fucking backbone of SoCal wrestling.
Yeah.
And they produced all these great talents. And San Diego is also starting to get so much better. Like, the one place that was falling behind was Orange County, but, you know, the less said about them, the better. So there's all this great stuff going on in 2016, and I remember you were working on SoCal Uncensored at the time. Yeah. And I remember our old friend Johnny, and I don't want to bring up more people who passed away. Rest in peace, Johnny. And
I love that guy, too.
Yeah, man.
Real quick, Johnny Ian story.
I'm going to tear up right now talking about him. Go ahead.
This was after he got out of the hospital. He was doing better. And he said, hey, I'm thinking about running Mach 1 again. And I said, John, I shit you not, John, whatever you need, tell me. I want to be a part. I want to help run it. I want to help promote it. Whatever you need, I want to be a part of this. And he's like, okay. And then he took a turn for the worse and, like, literally passed away, like, a month and a half later. I was like, oh, man, you know, because, like, he had a lot of big plans for Mach 1 and its comeback. And Josh Waldrop, who, you know, I don't know if you like him or not, but I know he very much loved John Ian the way that you and I love John Ian. I guess he's the one that has the rights now to Mach 1. I'm like, I would have dropped everything to help John with that. And I kind of wish I could have done more for him before he passed away.
I will say this, and I hate being a downer, but I want to say this before I get on with the story.
Sure.
The one regret I will say I have in wrestling was going to the EWF 20th anniversary show in 2016. I don't know if you were there or not.
I was there.
Not being able to talk to Johnny Ian at that show, because he was there and I didn't see him, and that, you know, fuck, I don't cry right now. That really got me, dude. It gets to me. It's like, fuck, man, I miss that guy, because we would always chop it up at PWG shows. Like, of all the people in wrestling, like, I would say he's one of the few people that I was, like, close friends with. We were always hanging out at PWG together and talking, and, you know, he loved my reviews, he loved my articles, and he would always tell me, man, you make me laugh and all that. And, and this was, like, when I was still in my first run here in SoCal, you know, before the sabbatical. But, like, I remember when I came back from the sabbatical, I remember he was having his health problems, and I remember seeing that he, excuse me, I'm wiping away a tear, and I'm man enough to admit that I'm crying, talking about my old friend. I remember he had those health issues and he had medical bills piling up, and I wanted to run a benefit show for him, and I told you about this with SoCal Uncensored being part of it. And, you know, the main event I wanted was B-Boy versus Chaos, and I was trying, and I remember B-Boy wanted to be part of it. We were trying to find ways to make it happen, but unfortunately, like, my mom ended up being diagnosed with colon cancer at that time. Yeah. So I ended up having to remove myself from the business while she was dealing with her battle. And then when she, you know, won her battle, you know, I started getting more and more involved with the business again. I started collaborating with different promoters, different wrestlers to, like, film promos and produce, like, skits and all that stuff and angles and all that. And then I started working with B-Boy on Ground Zero in San Diego in 2017 after the fallout with Gus and Finest City Wrestling. And I was doing a lot of stuff for them. And then, like, in 2019, when MPW moved to Chatsworth, I started working with them. And, you know, I'm working with them. I'm establishing relationships at the time. And I still had these ideas for shows that I wanted to do. I don't know if you remember Mikey Freedom, Mikey Haas. He was one of the co-founders of PCW Ultra, but he split off after a few shows, and then he started this thing called Bumps and Bruises and Brewmania. And, you know, I pitched some show concepts to him, and we were hoping to do it. Hey, you still got those cans? Holy shit!
I did finish it, but I kept the can because I thought it was pretty badass.
But I told a story about those cans on another podcast, so I won't repeat it. Anyway, I had, like, show pitches I did to him, that I pitched to him, concepts. He didn't really, like, he liked them, but he didn't think it fit in with what he was doing. When I was working with B-Boy around right around the, like toward the end of the pandemic, and like when it looked like there was a window for wrestling shows to like open up again, I pitched him the idea of starting Ground Zero in LA, another brand, and I would have like involvement in, investment in, and you know, help book. And you know, it never really panned out, so it was like whatever. So I'm still working with MPW. Ground Zero never really came back. And I remember at one point, I remember talking to Ray Rosas, Danny Devine, and Logan X, the owner of MPW. And I said, hey, you know, I got this idea. Like, I'll put in some money, and then we can get a bigger venue for you guys, rent a ring in a couple names, and then we can put on bigger MPW shows. And we were thinking about it, we were talking about it, but it never came to fruition. And like, ultimately, I parted ways with MPW, and in like August 2021, and I still had all these bits and pieces for a wrestling promotion in mind. Yeah. So I was just like, you know, I have all this stuff on my hands. I've done all this groundwork already. I might as well just keep going. So I had like various pitches that I would make to various dudes who were business owners, trying to get them to be sponsors. I would go to venues and try and pitch Epic Pro to them, just trying to find a place where I could run regularly. And I was contacting wrestlers and saying, hey, I'm working on this. Would you be interested in being part of it? And a lot of people would be like, yeah, yeah, I'm in, blah, blah, blah. And ultimately by like November of 2021, I had the foundation for Epic Pro set. It was just a matter of finding a venue. And by the end of 2021, I thought I had that venue, which was the Burbank Boys and Girls Club. And unfortunately, that never panned out. But yeah, it was just ultimately just knowing people, getting contact information, figuring out a date to run, which ultimately ended up being the same day as a GCW show, and I had to postpone my show. And it was just like, just putting everything I've learned into action. You know, it's like, think about it like how you get in your car every day to go to work, right? Like, you spent years and years behind the wheel of a vehicle. You learned how to do it, and now it's like second nature. And to me, that's sort of what it felt like. Like, the only thing that really frustrated me was like dealing with people who weren't in the wrestling business and all that. Sure. But that comes with the territory, and you know, just dealing with other factors of like, oh man, I got to worry about GCW and what their schedule is. And now, oh, Prestige is coming to LA, so I got to figure out when to avoid them. New Japan, all this. Oh, this promotion is going to be using a wrestler I want to use out of town. Got to figure out what to do with that. So it was just like, you know, just a matter of rolling with the punches and figuring things out and just learning to adapt. But for the most part, it was just very easy process for me.
That's it's very interesting how you say it's easy, because I keep thinking like, just getting in front of the building, getting in front of people like that. I'm kind of an introvert. Like, it's easy for me to talk to you about wrestling.
Yeah.
But like, going to talk to, like, I recently had to talk to a public forum for business related stuff. And that was, I mean, it wasn't difficult, but it just was very uncomfortable. And it's like an environment that I'm not used to. How did you overcome that? Or was it just second nature as well?
I mean, I'm like you. I'm kind of introverted. I'm not very social.
Sure.
And the hardest thing about becoming a promoter has been becoming social. Like, I don't want to say I'm shy by nature. I'm also not going to say I'm an asshole by nature. I just like keeping to myself for the most part.
Sure.
Like, if people will see me, they'll say, I said hi to you. What happened? It's like one of two reasons. One, I probably did say hi, but my voice was so low you didn't hear me. And I'm also not very, I'm not much of an animated person. And two, I probably didn't see you because I have really bad eyesight and almost everything's blurry most of the time. But like, for the most part, I never really had any stress in trying to talk to people about professional wrestling. It's like I know for the most part, what they're going to expect, what they're going to say. It's like I have like all this stuff in the chamber ready to say. So it's just like, I don't know, it's just automatic for me being able to talk about it. I never really feel nervous when it comes to those things. Like one thing is weird, like you say that, it's like it takes me back to my jiu-jitsu competition days when I was in my 20s. I was doing jiu-jitsu competitions all the time. And I would be getting ready for a match, and it's like, to me, it was like, just go. Fucking go. I didn't have time for nerves. I just focused on my thing, and like I stuck to what I knew, and I just did it. You know, it's like anything in life that you do that you know how to do, you'll be able to get through it. And I will say, I'm not gonna lie, like I have had nervous moments, but it's never really anything, never at a time where I had to talk to anybody about anything. You know, like I feel like I can, you know, just talk, you know, without really saying much like I am now, but it was just easy to deal with. Just learning how to, like, because I dealt with difficult people my entire life. Like, before I got into some of my later jobs in my late 20s, I was working for this, for this company that would basically help, like, groups, acts, and productions, like, try and set up like shows out here, like plays and performances, right? Like, let's say there's a little theater troupe in the Midwest that wants to come out here and do A Midsummer Night's Dream, and they needed help, you know, setting that stuff up. We would do that. So I would always be the one who's dealing with venues and all that stuff. So I ended up learning all that stuff, and it all just came easy to me. And also, like, spending time watching a guy like Super Dragon, you know, do business, you know, helped me a lot. So it's, I guess it's just second nature. I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's hard work. Sure. In the sense that it's time consuming, and you got to figure out when you got to do something and when you're going to have time to do it. And then figure out, like, prioritize, okay, I got to do this task later and then handle this task right now. Like, that's really the hardest thing for me. But ultimately, like, I'd say having almost like 18 years of experience in the business when I opened it helped me out immensely with Epic Pro. So I would say this: if you're in the business or you want to get into the business and you want to start your own promotion, please, for the love of Lemmy, you know, take time to learn, you know, spend like at least a decade doing this, because I'm still learning on the go. You know, I've been around for a long time. But man, like, it's hard work, and it'll beat you down. It'll break you down if you are not prepared for it. But I was, you know, so yeah.
Now I do want to talk about the card that's coming up in June, but the last question, because you've mentioned him so many times, and I'm curious, like, have you had that talk with, Super Dragon? I know that there's a lot of things going on in his life right now, and obviously Pro Wrestling Guerrilla is on sabbatical for the time being. But have you been able to talk to him and share with him, like, hey man, like, this is, I'm doing this because of you. Have you been able to have that conversation with him, or is that something you want to have that conversation with him?
I haven't spoken to him in almost 13 years, man.
Wow. And
it kind of sucks. But at the same time, it's like, you know, we went our ways. He had to keep living his life. I had to go live my life. I wish I could get in contact with him. Like, recently I've been asking people, hey, you know, if you're in touch with him, you know, tell him I'm here and, you know, I'd like to talk to him and all that. I really would like to tell him, like, hey, man, you did a lot for me when I was a teenager, and maybe I didn't appreciate it then, but I appreciate it now. And you taught me a lot about the business. I wouldn't be doing this without you. Like, I will say, someone told me, like, they told him that I was doing shows, and, you know, they said, he said, oh, that's so cool. I don't know if that's true, but if it is, you know, that would be good enough for me. That would, like, be, that would mean a lot to 15-year-old true fan who's still inside somewhere down there. But, yeah, like, I will say this, if I had to make a choice, you know, I would totally drop Epic Pro to work for PWG again and to make it to, like, if Super Dragon said, hey, you want to run PWG or anything like that, I would do it because that's what I wanted to do when I was a kid. I wanted, like, that was, I'll admit it right now, that was a secret ambition of mine. I wanted to run or, you know, be a booker or creative person with PWG and help take it to a level where it's like, you know, not where it is now or where it was, you know, like in the Reseda days or anything. I really wanted to do more with it. I feel like there's so much that could be done with PWG. And, you know, maybe that ship has sailed, but I would still at least like to, you know, talk to Super Dragon someday and say, hey, man, you know, you did a lot for me. And if it wasn't for you, wouldn't be here. But most importantly, I just want him to get his eyes on local talent. Yeah. That's the biggest thing for me. And that's the biggest reason why I started Epic Pro Wrestling is because I want to elevate great local talent. And I want want Epic Pro to be like a platform to like the next level. So that's mainly my main thing, you know, like I know it sounds weird, but I'm still a PWG mark. You know, if it wasn't for PWG, we'd have no SoCal scene. And I know like some people will get upset at me saying that, but that's the facts, you know? And I hope someday I can talk to Super Dragon again. And I hope someday, you know, we can do business together, whether it's like me and PWG or us collaborating or, I don't know, the dream having Epic Pro, you know, become part of PWG in some sense, you know, like the NXT for WWE, you know, but that's where I'm at. He's the only person I really wish I could like get in touch with. Not Joey Ryan. You go do something else.
Sure. So I guess that brings me to my next question. Now let's just get into Epic Pro. Obviously the next show is on June 2nd, new location for you guys at the Don Quixote, which has become kind of a mecca of pro wrestling here in Los Angeles. Seems like a lot of people are running there. I mean, I've seen a lot of Lucha promotions run there. Dave Marquez did a primetime live there. And now Prestige, I think, has ran there before too. And now you guys are running there.
West Coast Pro runs there.
West Coast Pro runs there. My corrections and retractions. You know, and then I also see that you're partnering with Jamie Iovine on this card. How did that come to fruition? Because I know for a long time, Jamie was a part of the Championship Wrestling. You know, he was a manager for Royce Isaacs, and he managed Chris Bay and even Heather Monroe for some time. How did that connection with you and Jamie come to fruition?
That sounds weird, doesn't it? How did you and Jamie Iovine work together? Like, oh man, it is a weird story in a way. It actually all came together through Royce Isaacs. Royce Isaacs, I started, you know, doing business with a year ago, and him and I have had a lot of conversations, and like we see eye to eye on a lot of things in professional wrestling. Like I'll say this, more promoters need to get their hands on Royce Isaacs. That guy is such a gem. He really needs to get out there more. He needs to be like given more opportunities because he can definitely like excel at given those opportunities. But we were talking and like we would just be talking about a lot of things. Like we always have these conversations about professional wrestling. And then we would be talking about Jamie. And he would tell me, like, you know, Jamie has these aspirations of doing shows, but it's just like he does not have a lot of the time. And he doesn't have, like, you know, he doesn't have the manpower of his own to, like, do this stuff. And I was telling Royce, you know, I'm in a position where I need help, you know, getting more shows going and all that. And I told him, hey, you know, if Jamie, like, you know, is interested and Royce wanted to put us in contact. So basically started through Royce Isaacs. You know, he thought we would be a good fit. And one day at an MPW show where Jamie does a lot of matches now because he's training at MPW, you know, Royce introduced us and we started talking. Jamie and I really hit it off. And for a couple months, we started texting back and forth. And then, like, right around the time of my last show, he was like, hey, man, I got this idea. Would you want to do Annie Up 2 with me? And we started, like, you know, talking. We started got the ball rolling. And it was just, like, a process of, like, let's figure out the best way we can go about this. And as it went on, like, him and I just, like, you know, we were just, like, so I guess we're so in tune with each other's mindsets about what we want to do with this show, to the point where it's, like, I would say, like, it's almost like we both know what we're kind of thinking. Like, not everything we're going to see eye to eye on, which is what you're going to run into in a business relationship. But sure. Him and I basically, like, it's been so easy to work with the guy because we both have a mutual goal of, like, wanting to put on a good show and to benefit the talent and, you know, just working our asses off to make this successful. And so it basically, like, yeah, long answer short, Royce Isaacs put us in touch. He thought we would be a great fit, and ultimately Royce was right. You know, I got to put over Royce on this answer, because he's pretty much the one who got us here.
A lot of Royce fans on this live stream. We get, you know, Royce is a former NWA World Tag Team Champion. Royce is a former United Wrestling Network Heritage Champion, former United Wrestling Network TV Champion. And these are the promotions that we cover very frequently on here. People always say, what's Royce up to these days? What's Royce doing these days? Is he still wrestling? It's like, yeah, man, he's like everywhere.
He's in New Japan. And on June 2nd, he's going to be facing Roy Horus at Don Quixote for Annie Up 2. I'll pull the curtain back for this one. I'd break kayfabe. I don't care. This was a match that Royce wanted. And, you know, because I'm always, like, trying to get his input on what he wants to do and the matches he wants to have. Like I do with a lot of my wrestlers. And yeah. I told him, hey, man, give me a list of wrestlers you want to work. And then Ray Horus was on them, was on that list. So I basically had Jamie get in touch with Scott from West Coast Pro, who helped us get in touch with Ray Horus. And I'll say this also, Scott from West Coast Pro really has helped out Jamie and I a lot on this show. Without him, we probably wouldn't be able to pull off most of it. But yeah, like, Royce wanted the match. I thought it would be good. Jamie also thought it would be good. So it was like something that it all just worked out. And that's what Royce is doing next time. So if you're in LA and SoCal, go get your tickets. Dice.fm. Look up Annie Up 2 in the search bar. It's going to be Ray Horus versus Royce Isaacs. And yeah, if you're not going to be in LA, you can catch a show on Triller TV Plus. It's going to be on there. I don't know when, but it'll be there within a week. It's going to be available on demand. If you also want to see what Royce has done lately, check out Epic Pro Wrestling on Triller TV Plus. Last show, he had a really great match with Starboy Charlie. Before that, he had an amazing match with Tyler Bateman in the main event of our November show, Mad Flavor. And in his debut match, he had a really killer match with Jordan Cruz at our anniversary show last August, Better Each Day. So check it out, Triller TV Plus, if you don't have it. You can get a 7-day free trial. You know, I hate to sound like a shill, but, you know, I gotta put over the product, bro. And Triller TV Plus, I love Triller TV Plus. Like, you get so much great content on there. I'm not trying to sound like a shill. I'm just saying this as a fan. You know, you can watch TCW, MLW, Epic Pro, MMA. If you're an MMA fan, they got a lot of cool fights on there. So check it out.
A lot of NWA fans still hold a grudge against Triller. And I don't blame Triller, but, you know, that's cool. When NWA and Triller ended their relationship, all those pay-per-views that all the NWA fanboys bought, we lost access to. So it's like,
ouch. Listen, yell at the CW for that. I'm going to say it's probably their fault. I don't have the full facts, but.
Oh, yeah. Know. No. I blame the CW. I blame the NWA. And I blame the NWA because they made a deal with CW.
Okay. Well, to the CW execs, if you're watching, I love your programming. I did not mean to disrespect you. J-Cal did that. It's his fault, J-Cal. Yeah. Also, I'm always open for business, you know?
You're doing it right, my friend. You're doing it right.
I try to salvage that.
You know, you're good. Another match that you have signed already for June 2nd is Zyra versus Zara Sakar.
Zakar. Okay. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, but yeah, that's going to be a really good match. I'm sure your audience is probably familiar with one, if not both of them. I don't know if they've been on Hollywood TV, you know, or whatever. But
Zyra has been on Hollywood a couple times.
Okay, so they'll probably be familiar with her. Zara did that West Coast Pro United Wrestling Network show. Zara's so good, man. And here's another like little inside baseball thing for you. The second Epic Pro Show ever, November 2022. No one left to blame. Available on Trigger Plus TV. She helped out like with the pre-show setup and all that. Yeah. So, and this was before she debuted as a professional wrestler. So Zara Zacher is not someone who's just using this to elevate themselves like or anything in like a non-wrestling fashion. She loves the sport. She cares about it. And I think her and Zyra are going to kill it. Zyra is very underrated, and I really think it's just a matter of time before she breaks out. It's just like she needs to, like, more promoters need to get their eyes on her and see her work, because she's so tremendous as, like, when she can do a lot of cool moves, and she can also, like, do some really cool character work. She's very talented in all aspects of the game. So Zyra just needs a chance to break out, you know. Promoters, you know, got to look into her. Fans got to look into her, and hopefully she ends up breaking out soon, because man, she's got so much talent, bro. She needs to like get out of SoCal and just go beyond. Like, I saw that she was in Texas recently, so I'm glad she's starting to make it out there outside of SoCal, but hopefully more opportunities will come her way.
Well, and I look at the you know, there's also Jamie makes his Epic Pro debut taking on Vinny Massaro, but also on the card, I mean, one of my hometown favorites, Brandon Gatson, he's making his debut for you. Doomfly is back. Adrian Quest is back. Chris Nasty, who I think the world of, is going to be on the card. Jordan Cruz is a stud. Love that guy. Of course, Ray Rosas, Kevin Blackwood. I mean, these guys are very, very talented group. But then I also see, like, you guys added Richard Holiday. That's pretty badass. I see that you guys have the artist formerly known as Black Taurus now going as Beast Mortos. I think I'm saying that right.
Beast Mortos.
Mortos. He's
making Mortos.
Muerto. He's making his debut for you. And you know, and again, being that I go to TGI a lot, I've seen a lot of Rey Horas. I've seen a lot of Black Mortos, Black Taurus, whatever. Beast. I'm sorry, I'm just going to call him Black Taurus for the sake of not trying to forget his name.
Listen, I'm not the one who would be getting sued, because you're just a podcaster. I'm the promoter, so I can't say that name, I guess. So,
well, and look, it's not going up on advertising. This is a podcast. Yeah. We're saying the artist formerly known as Black Taurus.
I'm saying you can say it. I can't. I just can't. I'm avoiding all. I'm keeping my nose clean, bro. I'm not getting myself into any trouble.
I hear you on that. So, I mean, there is a ton of talent on this card. And again,
and we're hoping to get some more talent soon. Sorry to cut you off, but hoping to land a few other names that will like make people go, damn, this is a show that, you know, I got to really see. And even if we can't land those names, we're still going to have like really great matches with the talent we have. Like, we're still like, me and Jamie are still like in the sandbox with this card right now, still trying to figure things out. But I will say this, it's going to be a fun one. Jamie and Vinny is going to be a fun match. I know, you know, again, breaking kayfabe because it's what I do. Jamie's excited about it, and he told me Vinny's excited about it. It should be a really fun one. It's not going to be like, I guess it's not going to be a typical Epic Pro match where it's like all about the work rate and all about the moves and all that. It's going to be just pure stupid fun. So there's going to be something for pretty much everyone on this show. And the prices are going to be really good. $40 front row, $30 for GA. Most shows of this caliber, you'd be paying so much more for those ticket prices. But we wanted to make sure, you know, we could keep it like at a good, reasonable rate while also not losing our asses on this. So I hope everyone comes out. I hope they enjoy it. I think it's going to be really cool. It's going to be our first show at the Don Quixote venue in Boyle Heights, hopefully not the last. And then after that, the second anniversary show on August 10th, featuring the Grizzled Young Veterans, James Drake and Zach Gibson. Zara Zacher's also on the show. I guess I'll let the cat out of the bag. Jordan Cruz is going to be on that show too. That's going to be back at our home at the Bill Green Sports Complex in Cudahy. And it's just a lot of exciting things happening for Epic Pro right now. And I'm hoping to have more exciting things happen for Epic Pro right now. Right now, my main goal is just trying to make us a contender in SoCal and LA. Because I know, like, out of all the local promotions, I think we are up there with, like, Santino Bros in terms of, like, being the best for homegrown talent. But it's also, like, we also now have to contend with GCW, West Coast Pro, Prestige, New Japan, and I want to get us on that level, and I want people to look at our talent as being on that level. And when PWG hopefully comes back, if they come back, hopefully Epic Pro will be basically, I don't want to say the stepping stone. I don't want to like make it seem like we're like anything like that, but hopefully be the next step towards PWG and all these other promotions, and that people will see us as like, you know, the little city on the hill when it comes to SoCal wrestling and homegrown talent, because that's what it's all about to me, man. And, you know, circling it all back, like I've seen so many great talents come by and they've busted their asses and had all these great matches here locally and have nothing to show for it, you know?
Yeah.
Never made it anywhere despite how good they are. I don't want to see that happen anymore. I want to be able to, you know, change things, and I want to change things for the positive. Whether people like me or not, hey, that's fine. But, you know, one thing you're not going to be able to deny is that, you know, I can't put on a great show, and that's what I do. I feel like all the shows I put on so far have been hits, and we just keep getting better and better, and we're going to keep getting better and better. It's like, that's why I'm going to be calling the anniversary show better each day every year, because that's what Epic Pro is. We're getting better each day.
That's awesome, dude. Well, you know, I'm not Super Dragon, but you know that I'm very proud of what you've been able to do in the last few years. Obviously, I tell you that almost every time I see you. I love the roster that you guys bring to these events. You know, I've only been to one, but I was blown away. Like you said, there's a little bit for everybody on these events. There's some very serious wrestling. There's some not so serious wrestling. There's deathmatch style of wrestling. There's tag team wrestling. It's good quality content. And I think for anyone who, you know, especially in this economy, you're paying for wrestling, you got to make sure you get as much good quality content for your dollar. And I don't think people can go wrong, whether it's ordering the event through Triller, you know, watching the replay, whatever, or going there live. So wish you nothing but the best, Andrew.
Thank you, man.
You know,
I appreciate that.
We're boys, but I still, you know, I marvel at your ability to get this shit going, man, and I'm very proud of you.
Thank you, Jay. Yeah, I don't have anything else to say. Besides, go Lakers.
All of your socials are in the video description, but if you guys want to follow Epic Pro, they're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, on YouTube. Check them out, subscribe, like, comment, all that good stuff.
We're on TikTok too, but I don't know if TikTok's going to be around much longer at Epic Pro Wrestling. So
I figure, and this is, I'm not an expert by any stretch, but once they block it from the App Store, you could still access it from a website.
Mm.
And then as soon as they do that, then there's going to be some people who are just going to use a VPN and still be on it. Cause it's, I heard somewhere where like 2% of all the users for TikTok come from the US.
Okay.
That's a very small percentage.
All I'm going to say is I'm going to be pissed if I can't find your dad jokes on Fridays. So
they're on Instagram, man. I'll send you the link.
Hell yeah, dude.
All right. Well, again, this has been Andrew Pacina of Epic Pro Wrestling War. The event is June 2nd at Don Quixote. Tickets are available now on dice.fm. Just search Epic Pro or Jamie Ivan.
Search Annie Up Too.
Ante Up Too. There it is. All right, brother. Well, be well. And until next time, we'll see you guys at the matches. Wait, where's the button? Oh, there it is.
Thanks for joining the stream. This has been a presentation of alliance-wrestling.com. We genuinely appreciate your support. Would you consider subscribing so you'll never miss a future episode? I'd also like to remind you, we do a live stream every Tuesday at 5 p.m. before NWA Power. You can find us on social media at the Alliance Blog. And until next time,